Nachman's Rebbe in Yeshiva. So besides, he was a Rebbe in Yeshiva when I was in Yeshiva in BMT. Rabbi Sampson has been many, he has thousands and thousands of Talmidim over the year. Included other thousands of thousands of people who were on Tiulim. He really brings Eretz Yisrael alive to people, both in practice and in thought. Baruch Hashem is the author. How many Svarim did you write?
Five
Svarim, Hashem. And then can still going. And he's also done a tremendous service to the Olek community here in Eretz Yisrael for students who are not really successful in integrating into the classic Yeshivot Tichoniot and Olpanot. He's opened programs for them to be a part of Eretz Yisrael in the best way possible. So it gives me great pleasure personally and on behalf of the yeshiva to welcome Rabbi Sampson.
Thank you. First of all, thank you very much, Rav Boaz, for the introduction and more than the introduction, for the invitation. And even though I'm kind of like a Rosh Yeshiva of a few different yeshivot and Olpanot, I don't really have such a chance to speak and the dialogue of the Beis Medrash, which is very dear. I'll tell you a story. When I first started, I used to be a Magid Shir in Merkez Arav in the Yeshiva Litzirim. And after a few years, I decided to work with Youth at Risk. And then I left the yeshiva to work with Youth at Risk. But I was afraid I would forget Aramaic and how to learn. And it was a shame. It was a talent that you pick up. I was a Magid Shir for many years. And I didn't want to lose my talent of learning. So I decided that I'd be a Ram in Yeshivat HaKotel in the morning. And in the afternoon, I would have my afternoon school. And then I was there for like a year. And I just couldn't take it anymore. I said, but nobody wants to slit their wrists. Nobody wants to run away from home. Nobody wants. And like the only problems were that, you know, should we learn Rashi before Tosfot? Or should we do the Rambam? Not the. And it was like after you're dealing with like all of these life and death situations, it was boring. And I found myself just leaving. And I told him, thank you very much, but it's just not for me. And for the last about 15 years, I've been involved in working with youth at risk in different ways and trying to prevent youth from becoming youth at risk. So just learning and, you know, just Beis Medrash talk is something that I cherish in a nostalgic way. I thought that before Purim, I would talk a little bit about Baruch Mordechai and Aror Haman and maybe try to make it a little easier to get drunk Ad Delo Yoda Bein Baruch Mordechai L'Aror Haman. And to look at a few of Ma'amarei Chazal to understand the concept. Well, first of all, Aror Haman is kind of easy. Everybody knows that Haman is the bad guy. But nevertheless, the Gemara says, Gedola ha'sarat tabat yoter me'memchet nevi'im. That what Haman did, and by Achashverosh making a decree, he was able to get the Jewish people to do tshuva at a level that no one else was able to do tshuva, and that we have to really thank Achashverosh and Haman for the opportunity. Purim is a great holiday, and it says, Hodar kiblua bimei Achashverosh, that the Torah was received once again. Kimuva kiblua yudim aleim bal zaram. The Jewish people accepted upon themselves the whole Torah as a result of the story of Purim, and we have Haman to thank. There's something a little bit, you think, well, of course, you're going to thank all of the anti-Semites for this. There's something we find, and there's an interesting mitzudas in the book of Nehemiah. It says in Nehemiah that he made a round around the wall of Yerushalayim when it was being built, because they were building the wall. And at the same time, there were enemies. It says when they built the Beit HaMikdash, half of them were building and half of them were holding weapons to protect them, because it wasn't a simple matter to build the Beit HaMikdash. So there's a pasuk, it says, Ve'ehi sover b'choma, that I took an appraisal of the wall. And the word in Hebrew for sover is not with a samech, it's with a sin. It says sin bet resh, which is the same word in Hebrew as shover b'choma. But it's not shover with a shin, it's sover with a sin. So the Metzudah says, Ve'ehi sover b'choma, that Nehemiah, in the middle of the night, took equipment and broke down the wall of Yerushalayim. So the next day he went to the Jewish people and complained about anti-Semitism and said, look, they're destroying the wall of Yerushalayim. If we don't band together and build the wall, then what's going to be? And everybody looked, oh, look at that. Look, the wall was built. Oh, and it's destroyed. Oh, this is terrible. We have to get together and build the Beis HaMikdash. And that was a tactic that Nehemiah used in order to get the Jewish people to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, according to the Metzudos, which is, in the same thing, we can understand how Haman did a great thing, Gadol Hasarat Tabat, bringing the Jewish people to a higher level. I want to go to the other side. Baruch Mordechai. There's an interesting question which is brought down in the Radbaz. The Radbaz has a responsa. It's almost always, when he has something, it's halachic. And he's found throughout the Shulchan Aruch. He was a rabbi in Cairo a few generations after the Rambam. And someone asks the following question. Tell me, what was Mordechai thinking when he didn't bow down to Haman and he endangered himself and the entire Jewish people were almost annihilated as a result of this? Why didn't he just get up, run away, and avoid the entire problem? Interesting question. Mordechai could have avoided it. Now, you know, it actually says in the Midrashic literature that Mordechai was purposely obnoxious. It says, Kol ha'am kor'im u'mishtachavim la'haman. Now, I don't know if you understand what it means. Kor'im is on your knees. Mishtachavim is like the Arabs do today. It's a belly button dive. And you act like a rug. You are on the ground kissing the dust. That is what it means, Kor'imu Mishtachavim LaHaman. When Haman walks by, it's not like everybody, you know, does a courtesy nod. Everybody is on the ground. They are now the new rug of Persia. Unbelievable. And Mordechai, Lo Yichra V'Lo Yishtachav. It's two things. He's not going to get on the ground. He's not on his knees. He's not going to bow down. And Chazal say even more than that. Lo yichra ve lo yishtachaveh was even an active thing. And it says that there's a story that when they were sent together to Yerushalayim to stop the building of the Beit HaMikdash, on the way back, Haman ran out of food, and Mordechai had food. He said, well, I'll give you some of my bread if you sell yourself as a slave to me. He said, yeah, but what do we write on? He said, well, you can write on the heel of my shoe. And he said, all right, and Haman signed the heel of his shoe, I, Haman HaAgagi, am a slave to Mordechai Hayudi, and then I agreed to sell myself as a slave in return for a morsel of bread. And he wrote that on the heel of the shoe of Mordechai, then Mordechai gave him some bread, and Mordechai kept the shoe. And it says that when Haman came through, not only did Mordechai not bow down, but he would stick out his shoe and show his shoe to Haman. Hey, Haman, look at this, guys. And everybody else who is prostrating themselves
acting like Persian rugs, he would say, oh, look at this. I, Haman the Agagite, have sold myself as a slave to Mordecai the Jew in return for a morsel of bread. That's funny, isn't it? Haman, you don't think that's funny? I think that's funny, you know. What do you guys on the ground think about that? You know, I think that's funny. Now, he was totally obnoxious. So you can understand why Mordecai was getting, Haman was getting very angry. And he got so angry, he really had an unusual reaction to that. You know, like you would think he would take it out on Mordecai. But he decided to take it out on every man, woman, and child from the Jewish people and totally obliterate them. So the person who's asking the Radbaz is asking, well, why was Mordecai so obnoxious? And why didn't he just run away and avoid the whole thing and avoid the whole thing? I mean, it's actually because of Mordecai that we have the problem to begin with. If Mordecai would have laid low, we wouldn't have had that problem. Now here, the Radbaz has three answers. They're very interesting answers. Because according to all three answers, Mordecai didn't really do the right thing. Answer number one is given by the Ibn Ezra, who asks the same question. And he says that Mordecai was forced into it. That it says that Mordechai Yoshev B'Shar HaMelech, he wasn't accidentally sitting at the gate of the king, but he was forced to sit at the gate of the king. He couldn't sit anywhere else. And the king said, you are my gatekeeper. And that Mordecai would have loved to run away. And just, oh, here's Haman. You know, we don't even know how often he took a shower. And he probably would have loved to run away from Haman, but he couldn't. So he was stuck at the shar. And then he had the choice. Should he bow down or should he not? And that's it. He decided that he's not allowed to bow down. Also, it's brought down in the Medrash that Haman considered himself a Avodah Zarah. And that he considered himself kind of a god. And that if you bow down to Haman, it was like bowing down to God. It was Yerek Val Yavar. My uncle told me an interesting story. My uncle was the personal assistant of Rav Aaron Kotler. And they were able to escape World War II through Shanghai. And he was once with Rav Aaron Kotler in a bank in Shanghai when a siren went off and everybody in the bank bowed down, and except for my uncle and Rav Aaron Kotler. The guy in charge of the bank, there was like a bank guard. And the bank guard started hitting Rav Aaron Kotler on the back, forcing him to bow down. And Rav Aaron Kotler wouldn't agree to bow down at all. And then the guard started becoming even more forceful and was not about to give up, because you cannot bow down when the siren goes off. My uncle was a young boy. He didn't understand what was happening. But Rav Aaron Kotler ran out of the bank, left his passport and all the money there. My uncle gathered up the passport and money and ran out after them. And while everybody is busy bowing down, the two of them are running back to their room. Meanwhile, back in the room, my uncle asked Rav Aaron Kotler, what was that about? And Rav Aaron Kotler says that the king of China believes that he is God, and that bowing down to him is like bowing down to Haman. And you're not allowed to do it, and it's Yehareg Val Yavar. A person has to give his life before he agrees to bow down in such a situation. And Rav Aaron Kotler was prepared to give his life, but there was an easier way out. Why not just run away? So he ran away together with my uncle, and they were alive, in order to make the great yeshiva in Lakewood. So now the question that the Ibn Ezra was asked, like the Radbaz, why didn't they run away? So he gives an answer that he couldn't. He wasn't allowed to run away. If he would have ran away, he would have also faced severe punishment, probably death by the king. You can't just run away if you're appointed. That's answer number one. Answer number two, I don't know if you're allowed to say this. It's like a wimpy answer. I don't know. If you're allowed to say it, I'll say it. If not, I'll take it back. And the answer that he says is that Mordecai didn't think about it. Like, it wasn't something that Mordechai was considered a rodev because, all right, you don't bow down to someone. You don't expect him to react in such a crazy way. Like, all right, that's it. Like, you're dead to me. Your family is dead to me. Your family's family. Your whole nation. 127 countries now. I'm going to kill men, women, children, everybody. Ah, that's the last time you're not going to bow down to me. And like, if you do something like that, you don't expect a reaction that is so crazy. It's interesting. That's answer number two. Which means that he didn't really think about it. And answer number three, Mordechai had Ruach HaKodesh. And he used a special talent of intuition that God told him that that's what he's supposed to do. And that even though if you don't have this Ruach HaKodesh, that's not what you're supposed to do. So, that's not what you're supposed to do. And because he had Ruach HaKodesh, he did it. So now, let's analyze these three answers. According to all three answers, the question is a good question. Why didn't he run away? And we have answer number one, he wanted to run away. He couldn't because he was stuck there by the king. Answer number two, he had no idea that that's what would follow. And answer number three, he had Ruach HaKodesh. And he knew that a salvation from the Jewish people would emanate from such a situation. All right. So now, if we analyze these three answers, and we say, all right, we're in the same situation as Mordechai, and here Haman is coming by. Should we emulate what we learned from Mordechai in the Megillah? And should we be obnoxious and show him our shoe when everybody else is bowing down? No. According to all three answers, if someone is in the situation, you should do like what Rav Aaron Kotler did and just run away and let, whoops, I'm out of here. You run away. So that we're getting a little closer to the concept Ad Lo Yoda Ben Baruch Mordechai La Aror Haman, so that Mordechai really didn't do the right thing. Now, I'd like to bring another source, which is a very interesting source. It's the Ar Sameach. Ar Sameach, he lived in Dvinsk. There's a whole story, if I had more time, I'd tell you about just the Ar Sameach in Dvinsk. He was an unbelievable rabbi, and Dvinsk was like a little dinky nothing town. But because he supported himself and he didn't live on the rabbinate, he did Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan a personal favor when he was already a great rabbi, and he agreed. And the reason why he got to this little town is because they were looking for a first-time rabbi, and he didn't really want to be a rabbi at all, but he, you know, he consented to the request of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, and he became the rabbi. And then it was actually a Hasidic place. And all of a sudden, the Misnagdim in this little town of Dvinsk had this giant rabbi, the Ar Sameach. And the Hasidim were like, they needed some kind of counter to him. So they went and they got the Rogachover. And the Rogachover was moved into Dvinsk to be like a Hasidic counter to him. And there were these two giant rabbis, the Ar Sameach and the Rogachover in Dvinsk, which was like a nothing place, and it just kind of happened by accident. Later on, the Rogachover was a very hard rabbi to be. He would always, like, there are a lot of curses that he would, like, you know, if I had time, I would tell you, like, a whole. But anyway, he was, like, a really hard rabbi to deal with, and the Ar Sameach said that it was a punishment from God, because when he was a young boy at Bar Mitzvah, he grew up in Mo'aliver, and Reb Shmuel Mo'aliver gave drushes in his town, and when he was a little boy, he would ask all kinds of questions that would say, well, how can you say this if it's here, and there's a Gemara in here, and over there, and he would just give him a hard time, and because he would give Reb Shmuel Mo'aliver a hard time, he felt that he was punished in his old age, that God gave him a Rogachover in the same small place. But anyway, Ar Sameach. So listen to this question. There's an interesting law that if Goyim come and they say, listen, give us one of you or we will kill you all. The halacha is you don't give up anybody. We're all together in this. Kill us all. you're crazy. I'm going to kill you all or I'll kill one. Kill us all. We're not giving up anybody. All right, kill them all. That's the halacha. Now, if the guy deserves to die, then you do give him up. So now, it says the following. How about the story of Shimshon? Shimshon is in Seif Sela Etam. The Palestinians are coming, and they say, we want Shimshon, or we will kill you all. It's war or Shimshon. So 3,000 people from Judah come, and they give Shimshon. So now, whenever I read Tanakh, and I always thought that Shimshon was the gibor, Shimshon was the good guy, and the 3,000 people from Yehuda who wanted to hand him over to the Palestinians, they were the bad guys. Now here, the Or Sameach says something very interesting, that Umashe b'Shimshon bo anshei Yehuda lo asrecha, af shelo haya chayav mita, nirei mishum de mesaken rabim, v'havi ka'oisek b'ziyufim. Or Sameach says that the 3,000 people that wanted to give Shimshon over to the Plishtim, they were right. And they were halachically correct. And Shimshon was not halachically correct. Shimshon was in the wrong. Because he was making a whole thing out of it. And that you're not supposed to just take, 300 foxes and put torches and just throw them into the fields of the enemy that can get them angry. And then they'll come back and retaliate. So, if someone would call, like, let's say Shimshon would go to the rabbi and say, it's all right, can I take 300 foxes and put torches in between their tails, tie them together and let them run wild in the fields of Aza? So the rabbi would say, no, you can't do that, because they're going to be antagonistic. Now, if the 3,000 men of Yehuda come to the rabbis and say, can we take Shimshon and just give him over to the enemy? The rabbis would say, yeah, he's a rodev. He's considered a rodev. And that because he's a rodev and he's causing problems for the Jewish people, you're allowed to. I remember when Rav Meir Kahana, Hashem Yikom Damo, was very active with Russian Jewry, and he would do all kinds of things. The establishment came out against him, and they said he's a rodev. And he said that, he's causing the enemies of the Jewish people to take retaliation and to retaliate against us. So here we see that Mordechai, Shimshon, Rav Kahana, and anybody who's going to take this strong stance against the enemy is someone who's actually in the wrong. And that you're not allowed to do that. You have to be kind of a little lower. Like, now, this idea can make us understand, like when we say Arur Haman and Baruch Mordechai. So what's so Baruch Mordechai? Baruch Mordechai, he's like Shimshon HaGibor. Who likes Shimshon HaGibor? Shimshon HaGibor is a rodev. And he's doing the same thing. And you have to be apologetic and say that, well, maybe he was forced into it. Maybe he forgot. Maybe he had Ruach HaKodesh with special dispensation. But, like, there's nothing Baruch about Mordechai. And then after you think about it a little bit, you can come to a very easy understanding, Like, it's really... It's supposed to be Baruch Haman, and it's the Aror Mordechai, right? Isn't that the way it is? And then you don't have to drink so much in order to get to the situation where you don't know the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Aror Haman, and that you can kind of get the two things a little mixed up. I'd like to say, maybe I'll mention another thing that's brought down. There's an interesting halacha that's brought down. It's in Hilchos Tzedakah, and it says that you're not allowed to take money from Talmud Torah and use it for anything else. And there's an interesting case in Merkez Arav. There was a Holocaust survivor who came and wanted to eat meals on Shabbos, and Rabbi Avraham Shapira gave a psak that you're not allowed to use the yeshiva money to feed him on Shabbos because the money is meant for Torah and it's not meant for Holocaust survivors to enjoy the Zmirot on Shabbat. But there was no way that Rabbi Avraham Shapiro would chase him out of the yeshiva. So every week, Rabbi Avraham Shapiro would give a personal donation to Merkaz Harav for this guy to be able to eat the meal in Merkaz Harav, so he wouldn't have to chase him out. But together with that, there was no way of using the money that was meant for yeshiva for something else. Now, the halacha is that if the paritz of the city comes and he says, I need 1,000 rubles, or you don't want to know the or. And you don't have 1,000 rubles. The only place you have 1,000 rubles is in the tzedakah box that's meant for the yeshiva. What do you do? Do you rob the tzedakah box or not? So the halacha is you rob the tzedakah box to give it to the guy who wants the money. So the Vilna Gaon has a commentary, and usually he writes where in the Shas this is found. And here he mentions that it's a pasuk. And he says that King Chizkiyahu cut off the doors of the Beis HaMikdash and sent them to the king of Ashur so that the king of Ashur wouldn't come and conquer Jerusalem. Now, that's very difficult, that source, because the Gemara says that that's one of the things that Chizkiyahu did that the rabbis didn't agree with. And they said, well, that's not what you're supposed to do. You don't cut off the doors of the Beis HaMikdash just because he wants you. So some of the commentaries on that Gemara say the reason why the rabbis didn't agree is not because you don't do that. You know, of course, you cut off the doors, you send it to the, you know, they need the doors. What can you do? You don't need the doors. I didn't want the doors anyway. You take the doors. And you just avoid the onslaught in such a way. The reason why the rabbis were against it is because he had other gold. And he left the gold earrings on his wives. You know, if you have a lot of wives, then you can have a lot of gold earrings. And then he had enough gold that he didn't have to use that gold. But if you don't have any other gold, that's what you do. And just like Chizkiyahu cut off the doors, so you raid the tzedakah box and you give it to him. Now, I learned this sugya with my son. My son was born in Eretz Yisrael. He lives in Eretz Yisrael. And he said the same kind of thing that I said, it's a wimpy answer. He said, it's a wimpy question. And that, well, it's just not what you do. Like, what do you mean that you kind of lay low and you cut off the doors of the Beis HaMikdash and you send it to the enemy, and that the 3,000 people who gave Shimshon over, they were the bad guys, and Shimshon, that they were the good guys, and Shimshon was the bad guy, and that Mordechai was all wrong in being obnoxious, and that Haman was the guy who saved the day, and that's not the way you do it. And that today in Eretz Yisrael, there's a new spirit, and it's a spirit that just doesn't allow you to do that. And it's interesting that the Beit HaMikdash was in the portion of Binyamin, and the portion of Binyamin was specifically designated for the Beit HaMikdash because Binyamin was the one tribe that wasn't born yet and never bowed down to Esav. And that's the special trait of Binyamin, the trait of not bowing down to Esav. And that's the uniqueness of the Beit HaMikdash, which transcends all of the galud, all of the exiles, and that it's the trait which identifies the absolute eternity of the Jewish people that just will not allow us to bow down to the enemy. So with these thoughts, I just want to wish everybody that is here not to just jump off the stage of history and go back to America to do all kinds of nothings. And that I'm sure the Ramim here talked to you about Shana Bet, Gimel, Dalet, Hey, Vav. And if I can say, I guarantee you, nothing wrong will happen to you if you take 10 years out of your life. And from the year 18 till you're 28,
You just learn for 10 years. Nothing bad will happen at all. The world will continue. You will have food and sustenance. Your children will have food and sustenance. And that I only wish that you will become more and more like those of the Torah Eretz Yisrael as you breathe the air of Eretz Yisrael and you learn the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. Purim Sameach. Wow, it's so good. You know, I had this drusha for like 15 years now, the first time.